hire people. They do a website. It costs me $3.
Catfigure.com.
It costs me $3.
Yes, indeedy. You're great, Gregorius.
Euphorious
for Gregorius. See, this is why I can't do play-by-play. Welcome to the Cat Figure Podcast. My name is Ryan DiPaolo, and with me always, Cat Figure founder...
Tom McLaughlin.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
I'm good. I'm ready here. I'm ready to party up in here.
Word up.
Cat Figure.
It's a change up. We're recording this at night, you know, so...
After dark.
So we may...
get a little wild
get
here.
Get jumped. I don't know. Like, I don't know what
Strap
the difference
on
is
your
at night.
Seatbelt.
Yeah. What's good in your life? Let's do some forced jocularity. You know, Mike and Mike, like, you do. When I worked for the Max Kellerman show, they had a segment making fun of Mike and Mike. It's like, now for a moment of forced jocularity, and it's something like, hey Golic, I saw you eat a Twinkie earlier. Ha ha ha. So let's do that.
Okay.
Your gimmick, instead of me being the dorky Jewish guy, Jet fan, even though I'm all of those things a little bit. And you being the fat Golic, maybe it's like you're prepared and I'm not. And so, oh, I have a good one. Okay. So get this, listeners. So we're getting ready to do the show, and Tom shows up to my house with a backpack with microphones in it and a laptop. It's like, what are you doing? We're just doing a show here.
Yeah. What are we doing here? We're, you know,
we're just a couple guys hanging out. And no, you know, we don't need a microphone.
Who would want to listen to us anyway?
Yup. Okay, so first of all, I didn't even reintroduce this podcast. This is our third episode. We're finna do a sportscast where we talk about baseball and football mostly, and we're interested in maybe like the front officer aspects of it is how it started, but who knows where this podcast will go. Whatever ends up working, we're gonna do. We're gonna see what we good. We're friends forever. Tom started this website, Cat Figure. It's a great blog, and it's taking off. And me, with, you know, having some background in radio, I was like, yo, let's do a podcast, dog. And so here we are. Would you say that summarizes our like? I don't want to speak for you. Would you say that accurate?
Yeah, that's accurate. It's basically the stuff that ESPN doesn't think you're smart enough to comprehend.
I like that's the word is bond.
Doesn't that make you angry?
Yeah, they don't respect you. All right, so Tom, I realized, and there's no articles really that I can't find a scientific study, but it's pretty much proven if you go to rehab and quit drinking, you cut your ERA in half. You know, CC Merkin at CC Sabathia, bro. He's the pitcher. A lefty. That's not that relevant, but he's a lefty on the Yankees. He was the highest paid pitcher ever. In 2009, he was made the highest paid pitcher of all time with a $185 million contract that the Yankees gave him. They'd offered him $160, and he was trying to hold out because he likes batting. And anyway, they were just like, all right, we'll give you $25 million more. They wanted him that bad. He was that good.
At the time, he was... arguably the best pitcher in the game.
Right. He had been a rental, like a half of a season rental to the Milwaukee Brewers. They traded for him, and he went 11-2 with a 1.65 ERA. But so he was pitching every third day. Like they made him pitch all the time. So CC Sabathia, you know, he is a 1.24 career whip, or 1.25. He's amazing.
Whip, for those of you who don't know, is walks plus hits per inning pitched. So if you think about it from the perspective of a starting pitcher, or any pitcher for that matter, it's basically the amount of base runners they allow on base per inning.
Right. So in the average inning, you turn on the Yankee game and CC is on the mound, there will be a human body with maybe an arm and a foot or so, 1.2 people on base.
A cup. You know, not filled. That sometimes could play into the point too. It depends how big of a player it is.
So CC, like I mentioned, he started to decline in 2013, and this obviously the Yankees are on hook for. You know, it's not NFL here. They can't just cut him and rip off his contract.
$25 million a year,
right,
too.
Right, and 2013, you know, you're still got to pay him through 2017. So before then, from 06 all the way up through 2012. His ERA was never higher than 3.38.
And that's elite. He's, other than the half a year he pitched with the Milwaukee Brewers, he was pitching in the AL.
Right,
that
exactly,
entire time.
Exactly. Yeah, I was going to mention that. Right, he's pitching in the AL. And the little bit he did pitch in Milwaukee, he had a 1.65 ERA and went 11-2. Like I said, he's just killing it. And anyway, he probably earned himself like an extra $50 million in that rental time. But so then starting in 2013, his ERA began to plummet, as did his velocity, go from 95 down a little bit down. We'll get into his pitching velocity and selection in a bit, but 2013, his ERA went to 4.78, and he went 14-13 still. I remember him getting lucky in some games. Then in 2014, 5.28 ERA. 2015, 4.73, which brings us to this year. He's pitching to a 2.20 ERA, and he is a whip of 1.24, back to his career average. So at first glance, realized he was doing so well the other day, and I just instantly was like, oh, he's sober, you know, not thinking about the gap between, okay, you get sober, because he went to rehab last October, the day of the wild card game, correct?
Yeah, the day of the wild card game, he actually left the team before the game with the Astros. He went and talked to general manager Brian Cashman, Joe Girardi, the head coach, manager, in baseball terms, and he actually left the team before the game, which I remember, you know, everybody was shocked, but at the same time, you know, for him to leave before, you know, arguably the most important game he could have been in a couple of years, even though he wouldn't have pitched.
Right, or if they made the play, right, he was going to rehab before a playoff run, and I remember the media were kind of like, could this have waited, and Brian Cashman was like, bruh, you know, this is dude's life right here.
I think Cashman was more like, yeah, go away so I don't have to potentially put you in the starting pitching
role. Right,
because
he was bad. No, you're right. It was debatable whether he was helping or hurting the team. Like he was 6-10, 4.73 ERA, like I mentioned last year. And so he goes to treatment, and as far as we can tell, he's sober this year. By the way, I mentioned his decline beginning in 2013 with his numbers. He's later said that he began drinking heavily in 2012. That's when he started to isolate. And so, I mean, it's a pretty big deal if you're an alcoholic and you're living your life as a slave to alcohol or anything. It's your number one thing in life. Your goal every day is, and maybe it wasn't that extreme for him, but your mental energy is being taken up majority by the substance you're addicted to. That's a big deal.
Yeah, and on top of that, aside from the physical drinking, when you look at it now, it kind of makes sense that he had a misperception of himself. Unlike a lot of other pitchers who tend to make adjustments as they get older in order to survive in the league. For example, Justin Verlander or Tom Glavin back in the day. These are both, you know, elite pitchers that aged well because they made adjustments when they started to lose velocity on their pitches. CeCe seemed to be confused as to why, you know, why he wasn't getting the results that he used to.
Right, and kind of in hindsight, that makes sense. Like, I mean, now that we know that he went to treatment and now that he's sober, it makes sense in a way that, you know, you're emotionally delusional. You have to live every day with a set of denial to be able to go to bed at night being an alcoholic or a drug addict. So it fits that you know, mentality that he would be in press conferences thinking he's just one adjustment away when his velocity is 5 miles an hour less on his fastball. And we have stats I'll ask you about in a second, but I want to ask you, Tom, so now we know that he's sober, and obviously that's a part of it, and maybe a prerequisite for him getting better in denial. So take us through, like, what actually has he done? You know, he's able to look at himself honestly being sober, we think. What are the adjustments he's made?
So early on in his career, and even into 2006, 2007, CeCe Sabathia's base pitch was a four-seam fastball, and he...
What do you mean by base? Like, how often was he throwing it?
Yeah, so earlier on in his career, he was throwing it about, you know, 36 to 38% of the time, maxing out at about 40% in the 2007-2008 seasons. And that's by no means uncommon. The fastball is, you know, for basically the entire history of baseball, right, has been the base pitch.
And his sinker was his second most pitch, right? Which is a similar, it's a fastball offshoot. So he was throwing, and he was throwing his four seamer 95 miles an hour.
Right. Yeah. 95 miles an hour. You know, that plays, that's a plus pitch. And so as his velocity sort of ticked down over the years, you know, hitters were getting around on it. And you saw this, especially last year. I remember there was a game against the Blue Jays at Yankee Stadium where, you know, he kept trying to get this four-seam fastball, you know, by hitters up in the zone. Jose Bautista, Josh Donaldson, some of the premier right-handed sluggers in the game. He's throwing the ball high, trying to get it past them. And they're just turning on it and putting it deep into the left field stands.
Right. It's similar to almost what's going on with Matt Harvey. Even though Matt Harvey's still throwing like 95, it's still like, it almost seems like he's too confident in his fastball, and you cannot get away with that when your fastball speed is 90, 91 this year. It's 89, but we'll talk about him, and he's not sitting on a fastball. So what was his, do you have his four seam? How much he was still throwing it last year, because this year
I do,
as Tom will tell you, he changed up his repertoire.
So last year he was throwing his four seam fastball 28.3% of the time and his sinker 30% of the time. And when you take a look at this year, he's only thrown a four seam fastball a total of 13 times. So 1.2% of his pitches. Now, it's very interesting to take a look at what he's done to compensate for not throwing the four-seamer,
right,
as much.
Where did those pitches go, Tom?
Yeah, where did all those pitches go? So back into the whole thing of, you know, being able to have a realistic perception of yourself. This offseason, CC Sabathia reached out to Yankees legendary pitcher Mariano Rivera.
Never heard of him.
Never heard of him. And, CC began watching tape on Mariano Rivera, as well as other Yankee legends, Andy Pettit and David Wells, and CC decided that, or came to the understanding that, you know, he's not going to be able to rely on his velocity to get his pitch past hitters anymore, so he needed to change it up. And what he did was he worked with Mariano Rivera on developing a cutter,
which is Mariano's only pit, like his godsend gift pitch that people say he single-handedly got a Hall of Fame first ballot career potentially with.
So yeah, a cutter basically, from a left-handed pitcher or for any pitcher, it basically, the difference is the movement.
It's usually a little slower than a fastball, but it is a fastball that moves, right?
Right. It's not necessarily an off-speed pitch, but it's the movement that really has the impact and sort of tricks the hitters. And so when you look at, you know, this year, CC has thrown this cutter 343 times, or close to 33% of the time. In his career prior to this season, he had only thrown a cutter 30 times.
Damn. This is according to Brooks Baseball, by the way.
Yeah, thank you, Brooks Baseball.
Thank you, Mr. Brooks.
And, you know, one thing that's also interesting is the cutters that he was throwing previously in his career, he was hitting about 81 or 82 miles per hour on the radar gun. When you fast forward to this year, he's averaging 88.4 miles an hour on his cutter.
Right.
So, you know, CC, the way that I see it is, the way I CC this is, he has replaced his four-seamer with, you know, this cutter, which has become his base pitch, and
right, that plus the sinker is equal percentage, but like the four seam and sinker, instead of a four seam and a sinker as his two fastballs, it's cutter sinker, which are two movement pitches. And but also you assume, you know, we assume, and I think it's pretty safe to assume, that when you add 8 miles an hour to a pitch that breaks, it's good, you're sacrificing break to make it more like a fastball. So it's probably moving less, but he can use it 33% of the time now. And so, like, I mean, that and sinker are two moving fastballs as opposed to a straight fastball that you can get away with when you're throwing 95, not 89 or whatever it is today.
Right, and this cutter has been ultimately the most effective against right-handed hitters. And this sort of makes sense because when you think about it, if a cutter is coming in from a left-handed pitcher to a right-handed batter, generally he's going to try and throw the pitch in on the hands of the batter.
Right, so breaking towards you. If you're a righty batting, it's coming at you, like it's breaking towards you.
Right, and when CC throws this cutter inside and is able to get it on the hands of the hitters, although the velocity is 88 miles an hour on a gun, the perceived velocity to the hitter, when you pair it with his off-speed pitches, you know, the perceived velocity of this cutter is much more than 88 miles an hour.
Right.
And you know, it really sets up his off-speed stuff in a fantastic way.
Also, when you're pitching inside real quick, like with a cutter that a lefty is throwing to a righty, it's in on the hands. That makes you have to pull it. You know, you have to swing earlier. So it's you know, it's even, right. That's just this, to your point. It's just more than 88. It's useless without his changeup, correct? I mean, it's like if he can't change speeds, he's screwed.
Correct. Yeah, and CC early on in his career had, you know, multiple plus pitches, his changeup, his slider, and so adding this cutter, it really maximizes the effectiveness of his off-speed pitches, despite the fact that he has lost so much velocity.
Hey, you want to hear something funny? This is actually on MLB. At Bat App, and it says average exit velocity miles per hour. This is for his four seam fastball. So basically
how hard hitters are hitting the ball.
Right, and this says number of pitches 378. So this can't just be his four seamer this year. They're very likely including his cutter in this and or his sinker. So either way, just to your point about perceived velocity when it has good break, his average exit velocity out of his hand, it says, is 86.59 miles per hour, compared to a league average 90.1, but the average perceived speed is 90 miles an hour compared to the league average of 92. So, you know, he halved the gap by 2 miles an hour, right? His real gap in speed is 4 to the average, but perceived is 2, and it's all about perception, baby.
Yeah, that is a really, really telling figure. You know, I didn't hear that figure until right this second, and that makes a lot of sense. And it's actually, you know, it sums up what CC has done mechanically in a nutshell.
It sums up what we do with the Cap Figure Podcast. We kill it with sick stats on the fly, bro.
Oh yeah. Well, Here's a stat. You know, we were talking about right-handed hitters, you know, really punishing CC over the past few years. So from 2013 to 2015, against right-handed batters, CC Sabathia was allowing an OPS, which is on-base percentage plus slugging, of .843.
That's bad. That's like an all-star selection. If you are a hitter and you have an OPS of .845 at half the defensive positions.
Right, yeah. So this year, that number, .843 from 13 to 15, so far this year, his OPS against right-handed batters which is the majority of hitters, is .589.
Mm.
And that's shocking.
I'm no mathematician or nothing, but that seems like quite a bit there, Tom.
Yeah, that's a lot of cheddar.
This year and to your point also, this year his ERA against righties his ERA against lefties is 3.68, and against righties it's 2.02. So and again, like we talked about, the cutter is known to be a pitch that left-handers throw two righties in on the hands, because otherwise you would throw a slider if you're trying to break it away from a lefty. So this is just very good evidence to your point that it's really interesting that the cutter is what the difference is to a large part.
Yeah, and another phenomenal statistic that I saw was, so far this year, in 65 and a third inning pitched, CeCe has only allowed 2 home runs and a total of 12 extra base hits. So, it's possible that there is some sort of, regression and like return to a mean.
Right.
But
that's still cool. That's a fun fact, as they call it on the Effectively Wild podcast.
Yeah, and this makes sense. A lot of those home runs that CeCe was giving up last year that stick out in my mind at Yankee Stadium were four-seam fastballs up in the zone, turned on by right-handed hitters, and by, for lack of a better word, eliminating that pitch, you could see 2 home runs all year. That's good for anyone,
Right. And there's not the other thing is that he has 56 strikeouts. There's not that many pitchers who top out throwing regularly at 90 that can get that many strikeouts. And his he is walking a lot, but that's better than a home run, right? It's like, he's getting outs, and that even shows you that he's not giving up many hits, because he has his 27 walks, which is a lot so far, and yet his whip is his career whip. So that tells you how little good contact he's giving up.
Right, and so when you mentioned CeCe Sabathia and the run he's been on since the start of May, he has a 0.82 ERA, which is the best in the majors of any pitcher. The first thing that kind of came to my mind was, who is he pitching against? Because in his latest performance, he was on the road against the Minnesota Twins, who are arguably the worst hitting lineup
in Minnesota.
The entire majors.
Oh, in the majors.
And,
yeah.
Target Field, where the Twins play, it's by no means a hitter's ballpark. So the first thing that came to mind was, is he's pitching against bad teams. And to my surprise, that was actually not the case at all. From the beginning of May, in 4 starts in May, he's pitched to a 1.02 ERA. He pitched on the road against Baltimore, Oakland, and the Blue Jays, as well as a home start against the Blue Jays. So,
two BJ starts?
Yeah, 2 BJ starts. So he faced the Blue Jays twice, which are, they probably have the best right-handed hitting lineup of any team in the league.
Right, and we didn't mention, obviously, in general, lefties do better against lefties. He's an outlier by doing better against righties than lefties just this year.
Right, left-handed pitchers generally pitch better against left-handed hitters.
So the Blue Jays, who scored the most runs by 100 runs last year, who have all right-handed hitters essentially, you think a CeCe Sabathia start is like a feast for them to buff their stats.
Exactly. And moving into June, 3 starts, 0.5 ERA. He pitched again on the road against a very, very strong Baltimore Orioles lineup. He pitched at home against another great right-handed hitting lineup in the Detroit Tigers. And then this last start was on the road against the Minnesota Twins.
Like we said, the rehab part of it is really interesting, and it's not talked about. I feel like it should be like Sportsman of the Year stuff if he can somehow keep this up. Obviously, he probably won't keep up 2 home runs or a 2.20 ERA, but he the strikeouts are a good indication of success. Like 56 strikeouts in 65 innings, is perfectly fine. Like, that's good. Like, and he's getting outs, and it's fine. What?
Yeah, and, you know, you hear a lot in the media, as you were saying, there are so many stories about, you know, the changes in pitches, but I think the story really here is, you know, he's probably not going to be making those changes if he's not sober and if he's not mentally in the place right. he appears to
exactly.
be right now.
Exactly. No, yeah, yeah. That's what I was going to say. It's a prerequisite to get your head right. And like we said, this is our theory that seems very plausible given all our evidence that he, you know, you get clear-headed and you're honest enough with yourself to be like, okay, I need to reinvent myself. I'm going to have two moving fastballs. So any last things on CC before we move on?
No. So if you guys disagree and, you know, you think we're both absolutely crazy
donkey
here,
schmucks.
You should hit us up on Twitter at @cap_figure or use the hashtag #AskCap.
Okay. So next on hand, I'm going to throw something at you here. I know you played lacrosse in a Division I school. I bring that up because you got some athletic experience. You're very athletic. You got very nice pecs and whatnot. We play catch and you're good. So this is a very long-winded intro and it's not very relevant, but it is. You'll see. But so I heard on the Effectively Wild podcast that the Diamondbacks visitors dugout, they designed it so that your legs fall asleep. Like Clayton Kershaw refuses to sit on it, for example. And the PR, like the Diamondbacks admitted, they said, yes, we designed this for that. And so I was just wanted to ask you if you've ever, like, what's the most gamesman thing you've done that's borderline immoral but fun, / what would you do if you were a baseball team? Like, what's the furthest you would go and what would you actually do?
Well, that's an interesting question.
Would you deflate footballs?
I would say I would do that. I would say my moral compass in terms of athletics is definitely not top notch. I would say, in fact, it's probably the opposite. It's probably where I'm.
Yeah,
the
you
worst.
Get really competitive. Actually, I know that's fun. I could see that.
I'm glad, you know, the last two times I've been to the park by my house to play pickup basketball, I haven't gotten into a fight, and that's big for me. I've never really had back-to-back performances like that.
You did end up bleeding though, a little. No, in the face.
I did. Yeah, I got a black elbow. Nice big black spot on my head, and that's, you know, that even that tells a story even better.
I got a
this
black
kid
elbow to the temple.
This kid elbowed me in the head, and
wait, hold on, I gotta pause to edit it.
Tom, a curse there. No, you know, that's the first time I've ever heard him curse. He has a fully clean record. Pre-tour employers or investors don't begrudge the guy, but he got elbowed in the head here. So you were saying?
Yeah, so I was upset about it because, you know, I don't want that on my face, but yeah, so I mean that, you know, back-to-back performances out there on the court, dropping 20 a game, no fights. It's big for me. And this kid elbows me in the head while I'm playing defense.
So I kidnapped his kids.
Yeah, so I just I took all his stuff, I dumped it out, I threw the bag in the East River, and I told him to have a nice day there, bucko.
But really, have you ever done anything like shady or?
So, not me personally, but my dad, when he was our Little League coach, you know, he would come to the game basically with like a fully organized lineup and everything like that. And I remember one time in particular where I was the best player on the team, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
And
duh.
There's like pitch counts, and so basically he had me switch uniform numbers with another kid on my team prior to the second game of a doubleheader, so that I was able
to
go.
Oh my god, that's funny.
This was like 8-year-old baseball.
Wow, that's funny.
Yeah,
that's a good one. I have one. I have so we put in a hockey camp. We played we would play in a street hockey tournament. It wasn't hockey camp. It was a regular camp. We got an hour of ice time a day. And then we also had street hockey where you run around on foot. And we had this tournament that we thought was a really big deal called the Pocono Cup. And I beat my roommate Sam for the captain of the team by one vote. I'll never play that down. Anyway, so there's this girl that I was hooking up with that was really like hot, like, but you know, promiscuous. I want to be respectful in the way I describe her. And so the kids were from a camp maybe like 2 hours away, that we were in the finals against. And I asked her, and they were sleeping there. I said, can you, you know, flirt with at least one of the guys and tell them to meet up with you at 3 a.m. or like sneak out of your bunks? And they did, and she did, and she said that three of them came to meet her and two friends that never showed up. And the next morning they confirmed that they were like, hey, what happened? We were there, we stayed up and waited for you. And we won.
And the Pocono Mountain Hockey League will never be the same again.
Dude, Pocono Cup, man. I don't even know what year I was going to say. I'll never forget the Pocono Cup season or whatever. So what about if you ran a baseball team? Like, would you? I think it's kind of cool what the Diamondbacks did. But then it's kind of like, you know, you're all in it together. I don't know. Blah, blah, blah.
I think all is fair in love and war, especially
if I'm the owner,
in baseball.
I'm doing that, right?
Yeah.
If you're the owner, like, if I'm the manager, I'm not with that because I don't want that done to me. But if I'm the owner, if I'm in the front office, which, you know, I'm more of a front office type personally. I don't know what that means. But I would do everything. I would do everything. I would give them a retarded bat boy. Like, I would do anything.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, all is fair in love and baseball. I mean,
that might be a good one, yo.
For example, in the visitor's dugout, I would put no money into that. I would,
right,
in the middle
right.
of the summer, I would put the heat on in there. I would go to all lengths.
Somebody pointed out a downside to that, though, is that that free agents may have a bad impression of the franchise as cheap or something. But I don't care, but just playing devil's advocate about going all out with a crappy dugout. The free agents may be like, I don't know about this franchise.
Well, this also plays into the larger picture of baseball is the only sport where the dimensions of the field are not exactly the same
mm-hmm.
from stadium to stadium. And
yeah.
you've seen a couple of examples where the general manager has gone to the owner of the team and they've actually moved the
right.
fences
the
either
Mets
in
did
or
it
out.
2 years back to back recently.
The
like,
Marlins did it this past year, and actually
and the Rockies.
The Rockies built a higher wall in right center field because, you know,
that's a really good point though, that baseball is the ultimate sport for this because it's the only sport where the owner literally controls the dimensions of the playing field. I don't know. I wonder. I want to look up after we're done, and I shouldn't be announcing stuff I don't know on the air like this, but
we're gonna go get brunch when we're done.
I want to know if there's like a like if there's anything in the Major League Baseball that you can't build a park with like 200 feet fences. You never do it, but I just wonder if there's any parameters, like to not have a freaking hill in the middle of your center field in Minute Maid Park. Like, that is the stupidest.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, because you could go some really weird ways with that. But yeah, this is actually a really interesting conversation because, you know, teams do this as well in terms of the personnel they pick. It's historically the Yankees have always gone after left-handed power hitters because, you know, their right field porch is only 315
right.
feet away.
I mean, that's more, this is legitimate, but it is kind of games. It's like edgy, right? So we could frame it as that building your team for your park or building your park for your team. Like the Mets moved in the fences 2 years ago because they said Curtis Granderson would have hit 7 more home runs with the fences the way they moved them. Stuff like that is like the lowest level of like gamesmanship or what. I don't even know what that word means. And then at the higher level you have like it giving them a retarded bat boy. I really like that idea, like little Ryan being their bat boy and like giving them the wrong bats. But I think they bring their own. But maybe like they're in the equipment room. If they don't bring their own, you give them like somebody who like gives them a see-through towel. I don't know, that's a stupid one, but you know, give Clayton Kershaw the wrong glove, like he'd probably freak out, he'd like kill the kid.
Yeah, and especially baseball where so many of the players are very superstitious. I think that the possibilities are endless.
Hire,
you know,
somebody to go like bump into some player while he's tapping the dugout fence 15 times before every plate appearance.
Yeah, or for, you know, for those of you familiar with Craig Kimbrell, the closer from the Red Sox, before he pitches the ball, he sort of does this
like a retard.
It's like a Matrix type of thing where he sets his arms completely horizontally to make sure he's balanced. You know, if the Red Sox are coming into town, maybe I, you know, maybe I put more dirt on one side so that the mound is uneven.
Funny.
So he just topples
over.
Get your
pitcher ready to do it, or you could like make some noise. I don't know if there's anything to give somebody vertigo, like mess with his ears, like. So, all right, so that's that. I just thought that was really interesting that the Diamondbacks admitted to making their dugout seats such that the players' legs fall asleep. That, I mean, I think it's cool, but part of me is like, that's a little ghetto. All right, so the other thing I wanted to get into today was a general look at the standings and like, who's doing well, who's doing bad, who would you marry, who would you kill, and who would you have sex with. What's your favorite team? What's your favorite color? What's your mom? What's your dad? What's your bada bing kududu? So tell me your picks. Who you like? Who's standing out to you so far, Tom?
Yeah, so here's a big hot take. Hot take alert. Hot take alert. So in the AL, I would say my pick right now, I would take the Texas Rangers to be in the World Series. And from the National League, the team I would pick would be the San Francisco Giants.
Do you have an what position? What are they in? Both in first?
Yeah. So right now the Rangers are currently at the top of the AL standings with a 45-25 record.
You swept the Cardinals in St. Louis.
Yeah, just coming off a huge series in St. Louis. They are four games ahead of the Orioles for the top spot in the AL.
What a hot take. Sorry, I'm trolling.
The Rangers are...
I love them. I love the way they're built.
They're the most balanced team.
Yeah, man.
And, you know, I'm taking this from the perspective of looking forward. You know, the team as it is right now, their biggest question mark would be their bullpen, but...
Which was great last year, but I feel like that's a question you could have about a lot of teams. Like,
right.
That's the best question to have, in my opinion.
But looking forward, at the trade deadline, the Rangers are also armed with one of the best in terms of the number of prospects as well as the quality of those prospects. The Rangers are atop of, the farm rankings for a lot of the minor league baseball analysts. So they're going to have a lot of ammo at the deadline. You know, if you had, an elite closer, another reliever to that team, I really don't see a weakness. And I would say that they would then make themselves the clear-cut favorite out of the AL.
Well, what are the odds right now? You said you had the odds. Let's see just how chalky your picks are while I mention that. It's surprising looking at the standings that Seattle is in second place, not Houston. Houston screwed themselves.
So the latest line I have from Vegas, the Rangers are plus 650. So if you were to
They are the second favorite to the Cubs.
Second favorite in all of baseball. This is to win the entire World Series. The Rangers are plus 650, meaning if you bet $100 on the Rangers, you would
profit $650.
You would profit $650.
You know who's third? It goes Cubs, Rangers, Giants. So I guess it is a hot take. You ignored the Cubs and you picked the second and third team.
Yeah, so switching over to the NL, the Cubs are seemingly every rational person's pick to win the World Series, and for good reason. You know, me picking the Giants has little to do with
that they're the Giants. Like, I mean that, like, the laundry, like, they've won it recently.
Yeah, even years. The Giants have won the World Series,
2010, 2012, and 2014. It's 2016.
So they have
to
win.
They do. It's simple math, guys.
They have to win. It's the same thing that, with the New York Giants. We're about to win this year.
No, there is a lot to like about So I hear you about the Cubs. I do dislike it. Their pitchers are overperforming, I think, But tell me more.
So the Giants, I love this team.
Tell me more.
Top of everything that you've heard and seen with the Giants winning three titles in the past 5 years. The Giants are just built very, very well, and this offseason they really addressed their biggest needs. When you look at the top of their starting rotation,
wait, we just didn't say their record. I just want to say real quick that the Cubs are 47-21 and the Giants are 44-27. They're second in the NL overall standings, and in their division, they're 6 games up on the Dodgers. And like we said, Texas is what, 4 games better than anybody in the division, in the league. Sorry.
Right. So when you look at the Giants and you talk about playoff baseball,
playoffs,
you know, I think the Cubs are going to end up with the best record in the league. That's not even a question. But when you look at playoff baseball and you look how a series might shape up, I would take the Giants top of the staff against anyone. You know, you're 1-2-3 there. You have Madison Bumgarner, who's in the modern era probably the
best postseason pitcher in the decade so far, at least.
Right, and able to pitch on short rest. And then, you know, this offseason, the Giants signed Johnny Cueto and Jeff Samardzija.
We're both doing really well, man. And I didn't like Cueto, like, because he doesn't have a lot of strikeouts and stuff. He pitches to, like, out, you know, pitches to contact a bit or whatever, but he's doing great.
Yeah, and it's interesting that you mentioned he pitches to contact. You know, the Giants are the masters of making a move to get a player that fits their team. They know that Cueto is going to be pitching at AT&T Park for half of his starts, which is probably the hardest park in the league to hit a home run. It's right on the water. The ball does not travel well, and the dimensions of the field are very, very large, especially when you look anywhere in the middle of the field. You know, you're looking at having to hit the ball 420, 430 feet to get it out of the park. So Cueto...
That's a really good point.
You know, Cueto fits that mold, and at the same time, Samardzija is very similar as well. You know, the problems that Samardzija had when he was pitching for the White Sox last year, for the Cubs and the A's 2 years ago, he was very, very susceptible to giving up the long ball. And what happened over time was...
he'd miss a pitch, like, right down the middle and get crushed after pitching great pitches.
What happened over time is Samardzija started to lose faith in having the ball in play, and so he was always trying to throw the perfect pitch. He was surrounded by, you know, some of the worst fielding teams in the league at the time. You know, the White Sox last year were like all-time bad fielding, and now he pitches for a team that is built around its fielding. You have, you know, arguably you know, the Giants and the Cubs, the best fielding infields in the league. And
what a hot take.
Samardzija is confident that if he doesn't throw the perfect pitch and it goes in play, that his fielders are going to make the out.
Right. He is pitching to a 3.14 ERA after last year's 4.96. So we're going to wrap up in a minute, but I think they're pretty cute picks. I mean, I want to ask you before we wrap, do you think that the Orioles are real? Do you believe in Orioles?
This is really tough for me because coming into the year, you know, I would have said absolutely not. I thought that the Orioles were going to be
in purgatory.
One of the worst teams in the AL, and I do. I thought they were going to be in purgatory.
Yeah.
You know, when you look at their offseason, they dumped basically all of their money that they were, you know, it's not a huge market team. They gave Chris Davis, what, like $160 million.
Right. And the Fowler fell through. And who was the pitcher, the bad pitcher from Texas they got? What's his name?
Oh, Yovani Gallardo.
Yeah.
But I don't believe in the Orioles. I think that the Red Sox are for sure going to win that division. My question with the Orioles really, and it's the obvious question here, is the starting pitching. You know, Chris Tillman, is he really an ace of a staff?
Yeah.
I like their bullpen a lot. I like Zach Britton and Darren O'Day at the back of it. You know,
I love their offense, obviously, but
they very well may make the playoffs. I just, the way that team is set up, I don't like their chances later in the year when pitching prevails in the playoffs.
Yeah. No, and you're right. I mean, even if they did make the playoffs, it's like I like a team. I would easily sacrifice Mark Trumbo to have like Rick Porcello. Like maybe they're both 80s, right, in the show rankings or whatever. So look, man, look. We really like appreciate anyone who's listening right now. I'm closing my eyes. Tom is looking at me. Close my eyes and meditate on you, the listener, sitting at home. Sitting wherever. I guess it's the future, and that's why podcasts exist.
You might be on the bus.
You might be no spitting on the bus. And you're listening to my voice, and I want you to know that we love you. We love you. You're loved.
We do.
This is a weird outro. Where can they find us, Tom?
Yeah. So, if this is, you know, your first time listening to our podcast and you know nothing about Cap Figure, you know, we have a great website with tons of articles, resources, and links. It's capfigure.com. You can also find us on Twitter @cap_figure. We're also on Instagram. We have a YouTube site.
Forget. Third priority is subscribe to our podcast, please, on iTunes, write a review. Even if you unsubscribe, just write any review. Even if you don't like the show, tell us why. Write a review and let us know why. The more reviews, the better. It helps us and it gets you involved. And additionally, tweet @CapFigure something you want us to talk about, or if you guys have a question, you know, pretty soon next episode we'll come up with a hashtag and come up with some inbox listen for listeners to access stuff to talk about.
Yeah, actually, we do have that. It's #AskCap, and
I didn't know the hashtag department worked on that. I'm sorry.
No, I actually didn't tell you about it because I didn't want you leaving any dumb questions in there.
All right. So that's it.
So thank you guys. Have a great night.
I'm the host, bitch. Have a great night. Thank you guys.